music, news, entertainment. It's all right here. It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
We are very excited to welcome one of Janet Jackson's amazing dancers from her Janet World Tour back in the early 90s, Omar Lopez. Omar sheds a lot of light on how the dancers for that project were chosen and what it was like to help choreograph the infamous dance breakdown in Janet's hit song, If. We also welcome Juno Award-winning artist Ivana Santilli talking about her brand new album, Late Night Light, and the musical inspiration behind it. We're really looking forward to chatting with our next guest. He was the man a lot of guys wanted to be when he earned the job of dancing with Janet Jackson in her iconic If video and had her hands all over him. Omar Lopez got to tour the world dancing with Janet back in the early 90s and has now moved on to teaching yoga and being a DJ. Omar, thank you so much for joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hi, how are you?
I am great. And first of all, I want to thank you so much for making time for us because you are a hot commodity in Janet Land. Everybody is very excited to have you on the show. So thank you for doing this.
I'm happy to. Thank you for having me.
So first of all, I'm going to take you back to when you were a kid. How did you actually get into the world of dancing?
My mom was actually a modern dance teacher as well as an instructor at this little studio in Manhattan. And just along the way, I just started really watching her and sort of getting interested in my own little way. But music and dance and movement has always been a part of my life.
Is there a performance on television or maybe that you saw in concert or on stage that just made you be like, I really want to do this? Like, is there a standout performance that you saw when you were a kid that was like, yep, I need to do that?
You know, actually there was, but it was not a live performance from, say, an established artist. I was very much underage at a club I had no business being at. And at the time, this club had these sort of resident dancers that would perform there on stage. You know, my cousin, who at the time was my idol, got me in the club. You know what I mean? And I was standing there watching these guys perform on stage, and something within me was like, that's what I want to do.
That's amazing.
There's something about it. Mm-hmm.
So now, who would you say influenced you the most as a dancer? Was it like another dancer that you saw? I know you just mentioned your cousin, but was it also like maybe an artist that you saw as well, like a Michael Jackson or a Prince, like a James Brown, any of those guys?
Yeah, I had a couple of artists that, you know, really inspired me in little ways. You know, everyone, Michael Jackson, yes. Never really Prince, so I didn't see him as a dance artist. But the people got me like Breakers in the Streets from like the movie Flashdance at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And also the character Leroy from Fame.
That's awesome.
You know what I mean? So with the B-boys in the streets, you know, Leroy from Fame, you know, but then also my cousin Doug. I just thought he was the best.
Now, how did you get your start in dancing, like with regards like to class? Like, did you take class or did you just sort of learn on your own, like on the streets and in the clubs?
I never had any formal dance training of any kind, ever.
Wow.
And, you know, when I tried, it was not very pretty. The structure of it was something that at the time, I guess subconsciously, I found sort of limiting. I had enough confidence issues growing up to be told I was doing something wrong at the time didn't really help me in terms of my encouragement to dance, you know. So I pretty much just learned watching and feeling. I started actually pretty late. I started at like 15, 16 years old trying to actually dance, you know, with the focused effort.
Now, what would you consider to be your first big break? Especially because if you weren't in dance class, because I know like a lot of people sort of either have someone see them when they're in dance class or there's like, you know, someone suggests they get an agent. Like it just seems like dance class is kind of the way that you open the door. So what was the door that opened for you that started your career?
I definitely have to say that, you know, if you were lucky enough to have access to dance classes, that's great. But we couldn't afford that growing up. So I was found in the club. That's where a lot of East Coast urban kids were discovered. And in fact, that's where a lot of artists went to find what was happening and what was relevant in the dance world. It wasn't necessarily the studios, you know, because there you may find trained dancers, but what's happening in the street is what artists tend to go to find inspiration. And since I was in the clubs, it was literally, you know, for me, either we dance or we starve. Like, coming up in the clubs at the time, I, you know, was in between places, staying at friends' homes and whatnot. And my two dance partners and I would literally say to each other, okay, listen, here's the dance contest. Either we win or we don't eat this week. And my break came when one of Janet's friends at the time, Josie Harris, who was a fly girl and also danced for a while with us on the Janet tour, informed us that Janet was going to be at the club and that we needed to be right.
Oh, my goodness.
So, in other words, get out there, do whatever you do, just do your thing tonight, be seen, and that was that. Kelly, I'm sorry. You know what? That is not my first big break.
That is not? You tell me what it is.
My first big break was actually dancing in the club in New York, and I became noticed by Kid and Play.
Oh,
Kid
amazing.
Play, a friend and choreographer, yes. And they saw how I danced, liked the way I moved, and gave me a choreography job. I was very much underage, you know what I mean? So they couldn't really, like, take me on the road legally, but they did anyway. And but the next thing they did was they introduced me to Cheryl James Salt from Salt and Pepper.
Nice.
And she basically is the one who gave me my first chance to not only dance, but to choreograph and conceive show concepts.
That's amazing. So what did you do for them? So you did work for Salt and Pepper?
Yeah, I would have to say Salt and Pepper, along with Keith Williams, who was also one of Janet's dancers in That's It, a Pose video, the gentleman who was dancing with her. We started choreographing songs. And I don't mean just choreographing now. We had to come up with not just the dance steps. We were given the freedom to come up with the idea. Hey, we're using these props and so forth. So we went straight from the club to conceiving shows.
That's fantastic. That's so awesome. And so Salt and Pepper, Kid and Play. And was it after that then Janet came along?
Janet came to one of Salt and Pepper's shows. Oh. Met me, Keith, and Randy, and then scooped us up.
That's amazing. So Janet, so she saw you perform that night, like you said, and then you were approached by her?
Yeah, we met her backstage, as it was our honor to do at the time. And then, as fate would have it, she was working on her next project. And through Josie Harris, the young lady who I mentioned earlier, told us that she was going to be at the club for us to be ready, for us to perform well, and perhaps we would be asked to at least, you know, sort of get a more of an in-depth interview process in terms of working with her on her next project. And it was an interview process. After that happened, she flew us out to Minneapolis while she was completing the Janet album at the time to sort of just get an idea of what we would be like to be on tour with, because she's very smart and very thorough. She said, these guys may be good, they may be talented, but you know what, they might be crazy. Let's fly them out and, you know, let's hang out with them for a week and just see what shows up. So because we went from basically not knowing what we were going to eat to being flown out to Minneapolis and staying in a house that she was renting at the time while she completed her album for the interview process. All of this while auditions were going to be held in Los Angeles for dance jobs, which, you know, some knew and some didn't know that she already had some dancers in mind that she was going to use me and Keith, you know.
Mm-hmm. So had you met Tina yet at that point or not?
No. I met Tina. We met Tina when we got to the house. The way it went was she flew out. How much time did we have?
You have as much time as you want.
Okay. The way it worked was Janet flew out Keith, who was basically the leader of our dance group. He was the most talented, in my opinion, the most creative, and he was used to, you know, so coming up with concepts. But his personality was really strong. And if you send him out with the wrong interview, you might lose the job. So basically, Janet decided to fly out myself and Randy Connor, who I'll bring up later on again, to Minneapolis so that she could meet us all. And during that time, me, Janet, Renee, Tina Landon, Keith, and Randy all lived there for about a week just to see how things would mesh creatively and interactively in terms of personality.
And so when you were there, like, did you get a vibe fairly quickly on that good things were going to happen?
When I was there, it became very clear to me that I just needed to be quiet and do what I was told, and everything would be fine. you know, but it also became clear that we were being really observed because, you know, Keith's personality and my personality and Randy's personality, you have three very different people. Randy Connor, later on down the road, did not end up doing the project with us with Janet. So keep in mind, I went out there with two dance partners, and by the time it was all done, it was just me on tour.
Wow.
So, and I'm talking about people who I was broke with, who I starved with, who I competed against other dancers with, you know, well, basically, before we even got on tour, they were gone. You know, Randy, by the time it was all said and done, ended up winning the Best Choreography Award for the song What a Man with Salt and Pepper, who was up against the same, up against Janet Jackson for our project.
Wow.
It's so funny how things work. You know what I mean? So.
So you're there in Minneapolis for a week, and then, like you said, in the end, it ended up being you. When was that decision done, though? Because I've actually never heard of Randy, and I sort of pride myself on knowing a lot about what's going on, but never heard of him before. Obviously heard of Keith. So Keith did make it into the video with you guys, but then didn't head out on the tour. So did you and Keith head to Los Angeles to sort of be at the initial part of the project?
Correct. By the time we got to Los Angeles, it was just me and Keith. You know, during their selection process, they, meaning Janet, Renee, and Tina, it was determined that they wanted to take two dancers, not three.
Mm-hmm.
And so Randy was the odd man out, unfortunately. And I think it's how all that went down, but it wasn't a very comfortable conversation. By the time we got to Los Angeles, it was just Keith and I that got off the plane and ended up meeting up with the girls who were already in rehearsal at that time.
So what month would that have been? Because that, was that into 1993 at this point? Or because I know the album actually came out in May of that year. Were you guys already selected sort of earlier on, like in January, February of that year? Or was it still in 92?
Yeah. No, it was January, February, because it was snow on the ground in Minneapolis.
Okay.
I remember that. It was freezing. You know what I mean? And look up Randy Connor, and you'll see he has the MTV Best Choreography Award with Frank Gatson for What a Man, with Salt and Pepper, who
wow.
was up against Janet.
So,
I don't know if it's 93 or 94, but around that time.
Okay.
When his album was out.
So now you're in Los Angeles. They've already picked the girls. So you essentially, in a way, didn't really have to go through much of a dance audition. It was almost, well, she obviously watched you dance, but then it was almost like a personality observation week.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. One of the things that worked in our favor was the fact that our routines were extremely crisp. And, you know, although we were considered street dancers at that time, our inspiration was a lot of Janet and Paula Abdul movements at the time. Clean, long lines with a jazz flair, but it just had a street appeal to it because we happened to be from the street. So it just happened to be really, really compatible with her style and great for stage, you know, so that we really didn't have to go through that dance audition process. In fact, while the auditions were going on, we were with Renee at the time. And Renee, I don't know if you know about him. He's just a really clever, very witty guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's just like, how do you guys feel knowing that all this stuff is going on and you guys already have your slots? You know what I mean?
Wow. That's crazy. Now, yeah. at that time, Omar, did you know if, because in the end, it ended up being you and Sean Cheeseman on tour with the rest of the girls. In those initial stages, was it supposed to be more men, like at more of an even number, or was it always going to end up being just the two guys and the rest of the girls?
Now, from what I remember, there was definitely going to be, it was almost a talk of it being all girls at one time, but I know there's going to be more girls than guys. And but the final decision wasn't made until the very last minute, and the conversation is more like, listen, so we're going to go with you, and we're going to try Keith, you know, because keep in mind, Tina was the undisputed choreographer
yeah.
of the project, you know, but Janet was really into Keith and our style. But Keith at the time, remember, we were kids at the time, had a tough time being a soldier. You know what I mean? He was like, yo, you know, why should we feel like we need to contribute anything? In fact, we need to be choreographing this whole thing. What's wrong? I'm like, listen, man. Yo, you know, listen, just chill. You know, I just sort of had an easier time being a soldier and a dancer because that was my position anyway, even within my dance group. You know, Keith was always in charge, so he had a tough time taking orders, you know.
Okay. Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is a former dancer, yoga instructor, and DJ Omar Lopez. Make sure to follow him on his Instagram account, at Omar R. Lopez. Now, Omar, when you guys sort of had the team ready to go, like knowing that, you know, it was going to be you and Sean and then the other girls, talk us through like those early rehearsals, because we all know that That's the Way Love Goes came out first. That was the first video, and that sort of was very a laid back situation, so we didn't see you guys doing a lot of choreography, but then If kind of came running through. So did you guys get into those heavy routines right away in rehearsal?
Yeah, what people don't know is that If had already been choreographed, but from the time, the minute we got off the plane, we went straight to rehearsal.
Wow.
We got our bags with us and we went straight there, and the girls were already practicing the If routine, you know. Dominic Senna at the time had walked in, you know, they were looking at some ideas of what he wanted to be. Tina came up to Keith and I, took us inside, and started showing us our combination, our, you know, sequences for the routine. And by the time that That's the Way Love Goes came out, that was like a blur, because you know, next thing I know, hey, Renee's like, hey, I'm going to direct this thing. You know what I mean? And, you know, what do you say? We really weren't at a place where we could, you know, there wasn't much conversation at that time. Like, hey, I'm going to direct it. Hey, you show up to the set. Omar, you're over here. Keith, you're over here. Do this, do that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. A lot had transpired by the time we got to that video, though. Mm-hmm.
Now, talk us through the If breakdown, because Tina has already come on the show a couple of times, and she's been, you know, amazing and saying that it was sort of you and her that came up with that breakdown part, which is obviously iconic choreography to this day. Like, there's thousands of people around the world that have tried to learn the choreography to that breakdown. Some nail it, some don't. But what was it like creating that sort of section? Because, you know, it's just so well known. Everybody knows the If breakdown.
I remember one day being in rehearsal at a time when I guess Tina may have been talking to Janet and talking through some of the things, her staging, what have you. It's one of those moments in which there was just a gap of time in which we were all supposed to be working on something together. So that was going on. The girls were talking. Keith was over here doing his thing. And I was just doing this thing across the floor with my arms. And basically, the way the dance breakdown starts, the hip breakdown starts. And for the most part, at that time, there was a lot of tension happening between, you know, Keith and I, because he was having trouble with what was going on. And so I was just focusing on just, you know, dancing and choreographing. At the end of rehearsal, or I think actually we got sent home for a break. That's what it was. We got sent home for a break. I'm talking home, back in New York home.
Oh, wow.
You
okay.
Know? And I think either Tina or I guess it was Nay who said, hey, listen, we want to get you in the studio to work with Tina and do some choreography for the video. We kind of like that thing you were doing across the floor, and it just looks like a movement that is quintessential Janet. You know, Renee is amazing. I don't know if he gets enough credit for some of his contributions, but he was like, that movement that you're doing is just, it's just great for her. We think that that type of feeling is something that would be go good for this song. So, you know, I was flown out to LA, and we started, Tina and I just got in the studio and started working on stuff, and it just flowed, you know? Like, I just knew one thing, just dance. Tina, because of her experience, you know, and her gifts, was like, no, not that. Yeah, that right there, okay, yeah. Okay, now what if I do this? Okay, so, yeah, done.
Wow.
it was more like that, you know? A lot of dancers can probably relate to the progression of going from dance to the choreographer. First, you probably need someone who sees your gifts to give you a chance to contribute and sort of help you figure out how to place your best things where so that they go well and cohesive in terms of the project. And Tina has been second to none when it comes to staging and placing things together. So she allowed me to do some things. To be quite honest with you, some of the things that I contributed during that were a couple of things that I was doing with my dance buddies. It's stuff that came natural to me. I'm like, well, what about if I do this? What about if I do that? Which ended up really causing some problems because, you know, sometimes, you know, when it comes to credit, you know what I mean? That's all a person has at times. So mm-hmm. At the time that it came for this, like, well, who choreographed everything? It was, it was Tina and there was me, you know, and Keith was like, hey, well, we used to do that too in our group, so I won't. It just became a whole big mess.
Wow.
we're 18, 19 years old. What are you going to do?
Right. So now with regards, because I know you said there was a bit of tension between you and Keith, and I know you mentioned that it was a bit harder for him to, like you said, be a soldier. Was there a sense of relief when that situation got dealt with and you know, he, not that you wouldn't want your buddy with you on this great, amazing ride, but how did it feel when things were like sort of worked out and it was you and Sean?
I remember this like it was yesterday that you asked me the question. I cried like a baby. I told Keith before he got fired that they were thinking of letting him go because of his inability or unwillingness to cooperate. And it was an uncomfortable conversation. And the day that he got the call, it wasn't the case. I told Josie, you know, okay, really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Me, Josie, and Keith lived in a house on Mulholland that Janet had for sale. Instead of putting us in a hotel, she did that. Okay, so yep. We had a driver that took us to and from rehearsal every single day because we were New Yorkers. We didn't know how to drive. That's my story. I'm sticking to it. Okay, so basically, I told Josie that they were thinking about letting Keith go. And she was like, you know what? I think it's better if I tell him because you two have been on the outs and it should probably come from me. So I did. And so when I finally looked at him face to face after he had a conversation, he was like, you're really trying to let me go? I'm like, yeah, you know, I know what to do. And then that morning, I see him packing up his stuff, and I'm just quiet. Because what you need to understand, Kelly, is this. I danced a certain way before I met Keith, mm-hmm. but I never danced better after I met Keith. He was one who took me to the side, helped me figure out how to clean up my performance, how to be calm and clear when putting together my freestyle. Like, he was like a mentor, a friend, and we were starting together in New York. So the morning that we were driven to the airport to send him home, I literally cried. I remember crying like I was losing a part of my life, you know? And then I walked into the rehearsal because we had to go straight to rehearsal after that.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw Tina, and she looked at me, and I looked at her, and I went to give a hug, and I started crying. And God bless Tina, while she's hugging me, I can feel her hugging me with one arm, but with the other arm sort of waving the rest of the dancers to get out the room because I was, you know, both Randy and Keith are now gone.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand?
Yep.
You know, one of the things that any dancer will tell you is that during the rehearsals, I was so hungry to do well that a lot of times if you looked in the dance room, you would see everyone's chair all together, but you would see my chair on the other side of the room because I was just so focused on not losing my. I didn't want to go back to living in the subway
right.
The way I was in New York. You know what I mean? So that whole experience sort of is what sparked my hunger as a dancer. I was angry. I was hungry. And I think that's why I stood out.
You're also very beautiful, I have to tell you. So I think that
Thank you
and your talent, and you're just such a clean dancer too. So I think that was very easy for you to stick out. And before I take you down the road further, I did want to ask you, because we've spoke so much about Tina Landon, you know, I've been fortunate to interview her and so many others that have sort of worked under her and with her. And I get the sense that she's like an awesome mama bear. So when I say Tina Landon, what does she mean to you, Omar?
Leader, gifted. An inspiration, and I have to thank her for my abdominals.
That's amazing.
When you say Tina Landon, I think Abu Keen before the dance rehearsal. I don't know if people understand what that was like, man. You know, we had straight up warm ups led by Tina, and those warm ups consisted of the same 250 abdominals that we had to do every single morning. So I got to be honest with you. Like, people ask me where I got a lot of my work ethic in terms of rehearsal
mm-hmm.
and my ability to withstand and endure. Like, paint, it's from those rehearsals with Tina Landon.
Wow. That's amazing. I love this. This is so great. Now, can you talk to us about a little bit about rehearsal? Because I'm sure you knew, obviously you were there, that camera crew that was going around sort of taking video footage, because when Janet released that as sort of behind the scenes of the If video and That's the Way Love Goes and You Want This, it was so great to sort of get that short little glimpse of you guys in rehearsal. After sort of the stress was taken care of, how awesome was rehearsal? I know you said it was a lot of hard work, but it seemed like you guys were having fun. Were the girls really supportive of you and Sean?
Definitely. The girls were all really, really supportive. You know, Sean and Tina provided very much, like you said, the mama bear, papa bear kind of supervision when it was necessary. But for the most part, you know, rehearsals go very intense and very productive. And we all knew what we were there to do, you know, but we also kept it really, really light, you know, when we were in LA, you know, things were just, they were just run extremely well. And after I gotten used to everything and some of the stress of that was relieved, I started to come out of my shell a little bit and allowed myself to have a good time, you know.
And what piece of choreography did you enjoy, like, learning and performing the most? And which one did you want to slam your head against the wall?
I'm very glad you asked that question, actually. I wanted to learn the All Right choreography.
Cool.
Believe it or not. That had that sort of street feel to it. I had a chance to rock like a suit and a hat. You know, for me, it just skated towards some of the things I found interesting in terms of what I wanted to perform as when on stage at that time as a young dancer, you know. Some of the Rhythm Nation was good. Anyone who's a dancer who ever wanted to learn Rhythm Nation, I understand until you got it learned. Because, you know, you may learning it is one thing when you're learning it by yourself, but when you have to learn it and make everyone look the same to that degree, you know, it's very mental. You know what I mean? You have to keep in mind, every dancer has it. Keep this in mind. This is very important. When you go to dance classes, what I found to be different between dance classes and street performers, I believe oftentimes you are groomed to learn how to perform both as a solo artist and as a group. Do you understand?
Mm-hmm.
When you're a street performer, your style is your calling card. So when you have a situation where you have a street dancer who has to fit in to people who are used to being polished, it can be difficult. Do you understand?
Yep.
Especially when you have those who are trained technically and those who are not. The deconstruction of the technical dancer and deconstruction of the dancer, of the street dancer, can be tough to do.
Now, talk to us about what, you know, Janet is like as a boss and a colleague. What do you want people to know about Janet?
Janet was very conscious of displaying, not just feeling, displaying gratitude for her colleagues. You know, I can speak from a dancer, you know, and from a dancer standpoint. You know, one of the stories I like to tell people is, there's a couple stories I can tell you. You know, so listen, guys, this is Renee. I'm imitating Renee, but not that well. Basically, listen, guys, we have to do an MTV performance, but instead of rehearsing in LA, Janet doesn't really want to do that. She knows she doesn't want to be bored, so she's thinking of flying everyone to Hawaii if they're interested. And we are going to rehearse out there, if that's cool. You know what I mean? You know, and so we're like, all right. And so we end up flying to Hawaii, and that wasn't all. By the time we got out there, this is sort of dating us a little bit. At the time, Janet decided to get us all the newest state-of-the-art Discman and a copy of her new album.
Wow.
While we were out there in Hawaii, all expenses paid, you know. You know, so that's one thing, you know. But then as you go along and you're a little bit more of her friend, you get phone calls like the one I got, which you check your voicemail and you hear her voice on the phone. Mm-hmm. Call me back. Very important. And then call her back. Like, so I was wondering if you're not busy, only if you have the time now. And you can say no, it's okay. If you want to come with me to Anguilla for my birthday, you know, but only if you're not busy. You know what I mean? If you want to go out there, you know, that's the kind of boss she is.
Wow.
In a nutshell.
That's awesome. I have to ask you this. Did you get a lot of flack from other guys who wished that they were the ones that Janet was slapping their heads around? Because I think a lot of people were jealous of you.
Yeah, there were a lot of people who were like, Joe, man, what's going on for real, Joe? How you, my street cats from back home. They'd be talking to me, yo, for real, Joe, what's going on? How'd you do that? You know, like, hey. Oh, you want to hear a funny rehearsal story?
I do.
Okay, now keep in mind, okay, I was first out of living off the street before I became a damaged dancer. And so we're practicing the IF routine. And it's the part where I have to kneel down and she sort of swings my head back and forth, you know what I mean? And so we basically have to have our hands on the lady's hips, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But Janet and Tina were joking around one day and were like, yeah, just grab the girl's butt, you know what I mean? And I didn't know them that well. So I didn't know they were kidding, you know what I mean? And so I go to do my, I'm nervous. So I do my thing, I do my turn, I get on my knees, she goes, and I grab her ass really hard, right? And so I let go, I do my thing, and that's that. And so we do it again. Kneel down the front, it was just on top of my head. I grab her, and you know how when you're nervous, you kind of overdo things?
Yes.
A little bit. You know, so I'm not just grabbing it, I'm maybe stopping circulation and blood flow, you know what I mean? So there's a little bit of a break, and I see Janet walk over to Tina and just start whispering to her. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm kind of like, what's going on over there? You know what I mean? And so the time comes for me to do the thing again, and now I'm extra nervous because I think something's going on. So I grab it her head extremely hard. Her head goes flying back, and she just starts cracking up and whatnot. And Tina goes, Omar, we were kidding. We're kidding. Don't grab her head. So that was that.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
I thought for sure I was going to be out of there. Like, yeah, this is it. I'm done. You know what I mean? But
oh my God, that's so good. Now, when I say these names to you, what's the first word that comes to mind? Tish Oliver.
Nonstop.
Seanette Hurd.
Gooby.
Sean Cheeseman.
Mentor, I guess. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nikki Pandenberg.
Yeah. Just a beautiful person.
Kelly Kono.
Innocent. At the time, I don't know now, but.
And I think she still is. And Cynthia Davila.
Sexy.
Nice. Awesome. Talk to us about what it was like actually being on tour, because you guys were out forever. Like, I think if I've done the math correctly, it was sort of like on and off for 18 months. Like, you were into 3 calendar years with that tour.
Yeah, you can't beat that.
No.
You can't beat that. What was it like? Time of my life. One of the times of my life, you know, the resources that you had, the way you were treated. Just keep in mind, you know, like, I had been on tour, you know, with, like, Salt and Pepper. I did some stuff with Kid and Play, and I wasn't really trying to compare that journey to anything. I was just happy to be doing what I loved, you know. Mm-hmm. But there was a definite difference in terms of my experience with Janet, in terms of the quality of the hotels, quality of the communication, punctuality, so forth and so on. But what stands out for me was just... I don't know. I just felt like there's a closeness that you get on tour, mm-hmm. that, you know, unfortunately when the tour is over, sometimes the fact that you don't see people anymore can be tough. But, you know, I got to say, for being on the road that long, I think we did great. I didn't really see, remember what a lot of us were still like maybe back to 20, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? 22, something like that. And so, naturally, like anything, there are certain little cliques that form, but it didn't get to the point where people were ostracized and made to feel a certain way. You know what I mean? Like, there's an overall sense of companionship with everyone. There was not one person on that tour I didn't feel like I couldn't talk to or get along with. Not one.
That's amazing. And do you, like, are you in contact with any of the other dancers that were on that tour? Because I kind of feel like, you know, I've been fortunate, like I said, to speak to some of the other dancers, like Kelly Kono, for example. And it just seems like you guys are in a very special sorority, if I can call it that, or group or whatever you want to call it, with regards to just being a Janet dancer. Like no matter what tour you've been on, the fact that you're a Janet dancer just seems like you're in a group that no one else is in, and it's a very special group to be in.
Yeah, I would say that's true, but a lot of that has to go back with Janet, though. You know, Janet made it a point to highlight her dancers. Not other artists were doing that. Mm-hmm. Not only did she hire dancers, but she hired, you know, some good-looking dancers, you know, females, too, and, you know, in a feel that can somewhat bring out the worst in people, she had no problem presenting us on that platform, you know. And so I believe it created this sort of mystique about us, you know what I mean? Well, for me it did, you know. Although I'm not in touch with any one of them, you know, like I said, I saw Shaunette last week, and, you know, the embrace that we shared in that moment, you know, was very special. You know, I have no doubt that if I saw Janet today, you know, I have no doubt that she would at least take a moment to just show proper love. You know what I mean? She's that kind of individual, that type of person. You know, Tina, the same thing. You know, like we grew up, you know, on the road, having the time of our lives, you know what I mean? Seeing the world, you know, it's a unique opportunity. And I don't see how many other experiences in life can trump that, you know?
Mm-hmm. What would you say to Janet today, especially because, you know, she's just released the new album. It's only been out for just about a month or so. And, you know, the tour is going on right now. And what would you say to her, especially because, like you said, it's been a while since you've spoken to her?
I would just congratulate her on continuing to do what she loves, on continuing to evolve as a woman. It's not easy. You know, I would ask her how she was doing, you know, which may be a silly question. But, you know, how whatever she's willing to divulge to me at the time, you know, how's her heart, how's her head, you know what I mean? And I'd probably just keep it short out of respect for her time. You know, she hasn't seen me for years, and she clearly has a lot on her plate juggling the world right now. You know what I mean? But, yeah, it would be something like that. You know, I would provide a space for her to share with me as much of or as little time as she could afford at that time.
I do have to ask you about around the time that you were on the Janet tour, the Janet Project. You know, we all saw you creep up in the TLC Creep video. How did that happen? Because you were so great in that video. It was so much fun, you and the trumpet.
Chili and I were introduced when she came to visit Janet at her home in Malibu at the time. And she and I hit it off, you know, really great. We actually went out to lunch a couple times and just kicked it. You know, it's just two young people, I guess. And I just remember, it's funny how you hear things, you know what I mean? I just remember hearing of an audition, you know what I mean, for the TLC video, you know? And I wish I had better references to this story, but I remember walking into the studio to audition for it. They said it wasn't going to be much dancing or anything like that. But in the back of my mind, I'm like, well, I kind of know, Chili, if I go down there, maybe at least, you know, whatever, you know, maybe it will help in some way. I go down there and I just start sort of just doing me, just dancing and kind of being around T-Boz. And it was just really, really, it was 1, 2, 3. It was like, great, good, you're good. First of all, my height. I'm not that tall, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Worked good with her, and so it was really a compatible size thing. And I was willing to take chances that I think other people weren't, you know, because at the time that they were actually casting more like model types.
Okay.
You know, and I'm not really a model, you know what I mean? But I believe my ability to dance and work around the artist while highlighting them, you know, is what sort of made me stand out at that audition, you know?
Well, you totally stood out in the video, so I'd personally like to thank you for being in that video because it added a lot to it. I love it. I love that video. I love you in it, so good job.
Thank you. Thank you.
And before I let you go, there's a couple of questions. I did want to ask you, when you came off the Janet tour, was it hard to adjust to reality? Because I've had that sort of discussion with Tina in the past where, you know, you get sort of set into tour life and then normal life takes a while to kick in. Like, what did you do, you know, when you first came off the Janet tour? Did you head back to New York? Did you stay in L.A.?
Well, there's two sides to that. Number one, it is really tough. You know, you have to remember, you know, I came off of there sort of detached, you know what I mean? And not having not really feeling close to anyone. I lost my two best friends during that process of getting that job and then being homeless. And so when I finished dancing, you know, I was definitely sort of in limbo. But by the time that ended, I had become somewhat of a commodity in the industry, you know, having Janet Jackson on your resume is like having like a black card, a black American Express card. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You don't have to audition really anymore. You just walk in and like, hey, if he's good enough for Janet, we got to have him. You know what I mean? So I went straight from Janet Jackson to working with Jamie King, who was doing some stuff with Prince at the time. Right after I worked with Prince, I was asked to work with Mary J. Blige as her background dancer. So she already had two dancers, though, and guess who they were?
Uh-oh. Really?
Yeah, correct.
Wow.
And Randy.
How did that go?
It was something else, because by the time I got back to them, I had been in L.A. I'd been dancing and performing at the highest level. And so it was naturally some discomfort because I showed up. And we didn't really do a whole lot of talking that whole tour, to be honest with you. It was really uncomfortable, but what it did was it just made me hone into my craft a bit more. And that was that. It's a movie. It's a story. You know what I mean?
It's for sure. That's crazy. Now, did you and Keith patch things up? Because if I've understood correctly, he's actually passed away. Is that correct?
Yes. Keith passed. I mourned him. Still do.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't. We tried to patch things up a couple of times. You know what I mean? Anyone who knows Keith will tell you that he is an artist. Like, Keith has his reality and the way he sees things. And, you know, a lot of it has to do with just, you know, he grew up basically raising himself. You know what I mean? And both he and Randy came out to my home in Los Angeles. A couple years before he passed. And I guess we just tried to be in the same space with one another again and see how things would go, you know. And I'm grateful for that. But before he passed, we did not have an opportunity to really exchange truths and connect in the way that I would have liked, you know. But it's one of those things in which I recognize that even though we weren't tight at the time that he passed, I realized how tight we are, you know?
Mm-hmm. And what are you doing now? I know you're teaching yoga, but can you explain a little bit about what that means? Because there's so many, you know, Janet fans that would love to know what you're up to.
At this time, I have become a certified yoga instructor, which has profoundly impacted my life. From my yoga path, I have blossomed into somewhat of one who helps those seeking a transformational path to do so using movement and music and meditation and spirituality and all of my gifts as a performer and as a speaker. And as someone who can put together sequences, are helping me as I express or offer what yoga means to me. And from that, you know, I've had numerous opportunities. Several students of mine, who've been to my class, such as, you know, Khloe Kardashian and Jessica Alba, who I now also personal train, has come to my class. I've gone and worked with her. I've been overseas with her. Working with her through yoga. I utilize all of my playlists that I make as a DJ when I teach. Yoga has become very movement-based, very dance-oriented in terms of creating a movement meditation that becomes a sacred dance of sorts. I'm also now sponsored by Under Armour as a certified trainer. They sponsor me, and that means simply that, you know, I show up and make appearances. They, you know, I have a contract with them throughout the end of the year to promote their brand, as well as, you know, by way of teaching in it and when I make appearances wearing it. I'm hosting events that they work alongside with me to promote. I can't really complain right now.
That's
you know
amazing.
What I mean? That's what I'm doing right now.
Excellent. Well, you know what? I think you're fantastic. I know the fans would implore me to tell you how awesome you are and to thank you for everything that you did, you know, being a Janet dancer and bringing us so much joy. Because anybody that got to see the Janet tour had an amazing experience, and you're definitely part of that. So on behalf of all of them and on behalf of my team, thank you so much for spending time with us. We really, really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. It was an absolute blessing. Sewell.
That is former dancer, yoga instructor, and DJ Omar Lopez. Make sure to follow him on his Instagram account at Omar R. Lopez.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show. Follow us on Instagram, Kelly Alexander Show.
We are very happy to welcome Canadian singer-songwriter and Juno Award-winning artist Ivana Santilli to the show. Ivana has just released her new full-length album called Late Night Light with amazing songs including Only Sound, Lovers Love to Rock, and my personal favorite, First. Ivana, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you. Good intro.
Thank you. And I have to tell you, I really am addicted to First. I think I've played it like 45 times. Like, I just love that song. It's so good.
Oh, wow. Wicked. Yeah, I was curious when you said which one was your favorite, which one that would be.
Mm-hmm. It's that one. It's so awesome. Is it hard for you to pick a song on the album that really stands out to you? Because I know they're probably all your babies.
It's funny that you're asking that, because that's what I was just about to say. Your question is well-timed. It is tough. Because it's a matter of knowing what is going to appeal to someone else, you know, because there's a point where you have to be genuine about the songs you're writing, but then there's also a point where you have to consider who's hearing it and what is communicating best to people on the record. And I found that people pick First too. People pick First a lot, Lovers Love to Rock, that kind of stuff. So it isn't easy, but I do have to listen to it through other people's ears, which it tells me a lot.
Now, have you picked the first single? Because as of the time that we're doing this interview, I know I wasn't told yet which one it is. So have you picked it yet? Or are you still figuring it out?
I'm still figuring it out. I don't think I'm much of a singles artist. I think I'm an album artist, which is kind of an outdated concept nowadays. Mm-hmm. So that's why we are figuring it out. Just which ones maybe to present so that it introduces the record or reintroduces me as an artist or introduces me, period, to people.
For people who don't know, because we actually have people listening from overseas, so I'm very excited. I hope that the people listening find you now if they're not aware of you. But, like, you have had such amazing songs in your repertoire, including, I've already told you this, but Sun and Moon I Love, which was from your album Brown. And then recently, or a couple of years back, Your Girl Tonight, which at the station that I work for, we played the bejesus out of that thing, like just all the time. And it's
really?
So, oh yeah. Like, I love that song too. And I was always excited because in my show, we played a lot of Canadian artists. And when yours would come on, I was just like, thank God. Like, I was so excited to play your stuff. Is it hard to look back and sort of pick some of your favorite tunes? Especially because, like, for me, I feel like I'm picking all your singles that I love so much. But, like, do you enjoy your singles? Or is it, like, more album tracks that really are your place?
As you say that probably means that I do singles, you know?
Yeah.
Meaning the things that you're picking, they are singles. And they are the things that I thought were the strongest in terms of translating what I, you know, what I'm genuine about and what will also reach people. Because there's always that conflict with artists where there's a thing that's the most genuine to them. And then what's the most appealing to everybody else. Sometimes there's a real conflict in that. And I don't tend to have a conflict with that. I'm cool with it. I like my singles. You know, I usually don't finish a song if I don't like it. That's how I do things.
Okay.
And that's why I don't have a ton of records because I'm, there's not much on any of the records that I don't like.
Okay.
You know, you have to be real about it.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you about your songwriting process because I remember reading like an interview with Elton John, like this was years ago, but he said, you know, I'm sort of paraphrasing, but basically he was like, if I don't feel that the song is going somewhere in like 10 minutes, like I'm done with it. Like it's not happening. So how much time do you give yourself to sort of be like, yes, it's happening, or no, this is like a brick wall?
That's actually pretty good. That's probably what it is. It's, you know, I've tried to push something further and it just doesn't. It really does tell you something for pretty much soon in. Like for me, it's usually either chord progressions or things like that. Those ones tell me most because that's all about feeling. Like chords are vibrations, you know, the different notes hitting together to make vibrations. So they're the ones that say the most to me. Lyrical ideas, oftentimes they'll go on a note somewhere, in a notebook somewhere, and maybe get forgotten about. But chords, feeling, you never forget, you know? So I think that's exactly right. I don't keep pushing. Like, you do know soon in. And then sometimes you're really excited about something, and it doesn't go as far as you thought it would. Kind of like relationships.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
So good.
Maybe I'll stop right there.
Well, I wanted to ask you as well, when it comes to you know, working on your music, you know, again, you're a multi-instrumentalist, and including playing the trumpet. So which instrument speaks to your soul the most? Is it the piano or the keyboard?
Speaks to my soul the most. You're good. I don't know if you're going to edit out this stuff about you being good, but you're good. They do different things. Trumpet speaks to a certain power,
yeah,
and an excitement. Because when I pull the trumpet out, it's a topping, you know, and it's pulling the energy at its furthest. And it's also a bit of a surprise. The keys are the closest to my soul that's outside of myself, you know, because it is your fingers as you playing, but the sound is being created by this outside instrument. And so vocals would be the closest, but I love the keys a lot. Oh my gosh, I feel like a child answering that question because it's kind of an indecisive answer.
That's okay.
That's why I play a few,
okay,
because they serve different purposes, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's a thing that happens when you start getting comfortable with your own voice. It's an internal vibration, right? And it sometimes soothes you.
Right.
And that's what it should do. And that's why sometimes you also have to be careful that you're not always singing out loud in a room with people not necessarily there for that, like a library or a bank.
That's awesome.
You know, so you have to be careful how much you like your own instrument.
Yes, I can understand that. How would you describe your sound? Because, you know, I've read, first of all, I'm sure it's clear to my listeners right now, I'm a huge fan of yours. And so I like know your style, but I feel like every time I read something about you, they give you like 97 descriptive words about what type of artist you are. But like, what are you? Like, what is Ivana Santilli? Like, is it R&B? Is that where your bass comes from? Like, where are you?
I'm going to say, I think really I'm based in soul, because it really is a guttural thing of why I'm even bothering to do music and I use the word bother because it's not necessarily the smartest career. It really is a guttural career, you know? So I'd say it's soul, but I love so much music. Like this album was a lot of influence came from rock and roll. You know, there was a Billy Joel influence, you know, there was a Prince influence, but then Prince is what? Soul and rock and roll, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's things like that. Even like, I think a Bill Withers can get played on classic rock radio, as can Bob Marley. So that's where I think it's somewhere, it's the energy of rock and roll, but it's the guts of soul.
Won't mention any names, no time, no place, no matter it happens. You put in, I put this before, or anyone or anything. So tell me, when will I, when will I be first? When will I, when will I get my turn? When you make that excuse, you can make me number two. So when will I,
with empty promises. So when
The Kelly Alexander Show. Follow us on Instagram, Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you so much for listening to the show this week, and a big thank you going out to my guests, Omar Lopez and Ivana Santilli. Here is your inspirational quote of the week, this time coming from Abraham Lincoln. Be sure you put your feet in the right place, then stand firm. We'd love for you to follow us on all of our social media, which you can find on our brand new website, kellyalexandershow.com. Have a great week. You and I will chat soon.